Welcome to the Healthcare IT Today interview series. We feel lucky to be able to talk to so many smart, passionate, and knowledgeable people in healthcare. Now, we're taking our favorite interviews and sharing them with you. So sit back, relax, and enjoy perspectives on the world of health IT.
Hey everyone, I'm John Lynn, the founder and chief editor at Healthcare IT Today. We're excited to bring you another in our series of interviews with top leaders in health IT. And we have two guests with us today. We have Cam Diemer, he's CEO at Dr. First, and Dr. Neela Jessel, she's CMO at Athena Health. Welcome.
Hi, John. Good to be here.
Hi. Yeah.
Great to have you. Excited for this discussion. We have a really interesting topic. I mean, it's a topic actually with Dr. First we've talked about a few times over the years that we've worked together at Healthcare IT Today. But, I think it's going to be interesting to hear what you all think about the kind of the future of e-prescribing and the evolution of e-prescribing. You know, obviously, Neela from Athena, you know, you touch 20% of U.S. physicians through your platform, which is a significant, you know, impact, you know, when you think about e-prescribing. And Dr. First, you know, working with over 300 EHR somewhere in that neighborhood and many other health IT partners, I think you have a really interesting perspective on e-prescribing and also kind of the evolution towards medication management. So, you know, Cam, maybe you could start us there. You know, how did we get where we are today with e-prescribing as part of this medication management?
Yeah, so maybe, John, we should start with where we actually are today, because it's kind of interesting. A couple years ago, Surescript released like a state of e-prescribing report. And at that time, a couple years ago, they were noting that we're nearly 100% uptime on the e-prescribing network. 99% of the population of the US shows up in the database now, having received an electronic script of some kind. Annually, we're doing over 2 billion new e-prescriptions a year, which is 94% of all filled prescriptions. And 92% of prescribers are connected, and almost every single state in the country has mandated e-prescribing. So when we think about where we are, I mean, we've come a heck of a long way.
Sounds like the work's done. Not really.
That's why I thought we ought to start there. You gotta remember, this is like, arguably, this initiative to get e-prescribing going in the U.S. is over 30 years old. Mm-hmm. It's hard to imagine, but you know, some of us have given a very good part of our career to this, to trying to make it go. In the very beginning, so talking about how we got here, just a really quick sort of history of e-prescribing. A lot of the work originally was done actually by PBMs. Mm-hmm. PBMs were looking for a way to move formulary compliance upstream. What they were doing at the time when they started working on this in the early 90s was they would send a letter to a doctor after he wrote a script and they got a claim from the pharmacy. And they would say, look, we'd really prefer you prescribe drug B instead of drug A. And the doctors would just throw those away or put them in a file and forget about it, you know, whatever. So PBMs were looking for a real-time way to move this formulary compliance upstream. And it was a natural extension of what they were already doing in electronic claims. They already had network design, they already had processes for claims, and they could just move that over and apply the same principles into electronic prescriptions. Over time, pharmacy jumped in as well, but they were primarily reacting to the PBMs and didn't want to get cut out of this process. You know, if the PBM found a way to get themselves in between the doctor and the pharmacy, there was fear that the scripts might be diverted as well, and pharmacy wasn't having any of that. So they jumped in and did some of the very early work as well, primarily focused on not so much formulary compliance as automating the whole end-to-end process to kind of, you know, make it efficient, eliminate the phone calls, eliminate the need for a lot of people to process paper prescriptions. I shouldn't overlook some of the EHRs. There were a few EHRs who very early on had some vision around this, but ultimately it was really the PBMs and pharma who brought it into the big time. And they had to overcome some just tremendous challenges. I mean, in the beginning, you had hundreds of EHRs trying to connect to hundreds of pharmacy side entities, and everyone needed to do it the same way. They had to be able to communicate with each other. And they just struggled to get past that chicken and egg problem. And it really didn't start to take off until the PBMs and the pharmacies kind of buried the hatchet to some degree, joined hands, started working together. They joined their two companies, RxHub and SureScripts, and just, you know, the surviving entity was called SureScripts. And still it wouldn't really go until the government jumped in. Right. So this was a bit of a public-private success story here. Government issued mandates, they put incentives and disincentives in place, and they really brought the doctors, to some extent, kicking and screaming to the table, because e-prescribing was never designed for doctors. It wasn't aimed at meeting their needs. It was aimed at formulary compliance and efficiency and workflow. So the government jumped in to bring the last piece, which was to bring the doctors to the table. And 30 years later, we're in a pretty good place.
An overnight success story. I love it. So in healthcare, 30 years is overnight. Now, Dila, I'm sure you feel that firsthand, you know, being a doctor yourself, but yeah, I'd love to hear your thoughts on kind of this evolution and maybe dive into some of the unintended consequences of how the system works, as Cam kind of described how it was developed.
Yeah, sure. So first of all, I'll agree with Cam that it seems a long time ago that we were on paper. It's not that long ago, but, you know, e-prescribing has become so commonplace that I know many physicians, including myself, who like struggle to write a paper prescription now. And this is a funny conversation I often have with physicians when they fault us, meaning us, the EHR vendor, for not offering a certain medication right away in the compendium, the electronic compendium, or if there's downtime to the system, right? Which happens rarely, but it does happen. And my first question is always, well, how did you used to do it before electronic medical records, right? We did this for a very long time and it was possible. So then the answer I usually get is, I don't even remember where my prescription pad is. It's been so long that I've actually written a paper prescription. So, you know, that just as an anecdotal evidence that yes, e-prescribing has come very far and is very widely accepted, especially now that controlled substances can be prescribed and must be prescribed electronically in all states. So there are residual challenges, many, I would say, and you know, Cam is absolutely correct that electronic prescribing by and large was developed not with the physician and the patient in mind, right? But more for efficiencies and pharmacy compliance. And that's really evident in many of the new standards that have recently been released and had to be implemented. I think the most recent one is NCPDP standard 19.12E, which was just mandated last year, towards the end of last year. And it really did not take into consideration at all how prescribers actually prescribe medication. And it created significant headaches on the physician and the EHR vendor side, because it was really geared towards pharmacy prescribing standards and not physician prescribing standards. So that's one challenge. The other challenge, of course, is that now it has become so easy to send prescriptions to the pharmacy that many times patients don't pick up the prescriptions, right? So we send them or they get sent, patients request refills, they get automatically filled. And then I wanna say up to 20% or so of prescriptions don't actually get picked up after they get filled. So now pharmacies have to unfill prescriptions, right? Reverse the claims with the insurance companies. And that has unforeseen or downstream consequences. So for example, I as a physician may get the fill history in my EHR and assume that the patient filled the medication, but that does not equal to the patient actually having picked up the medication and taking the medication. So there is, you know, incorrect information that we all rely on and missing transparency, what that information actually means. And many prescribers incorrectly assume that the download of the fill history means the patient actually filled it and picked it up and takes it. So that's just a couple of the points that come to my mind right off the bat. There's many more, but I know we're time limited. So I'll hand it back to you.
Well, I mean, I obviously jokingly said that we're done, right? But you know, as you highlight, there's so much more to do in this. And Cam, you know, I mean, as you think about it, there's been a lot of changes to the healthcare environment in it, ongoing changes and challenges, especially even in how we think about this, right? From, okay, I just want to send a script to the pharmacy, to that whole medication management. What would you say, you know, and how would you look at it? Why we need to kind of redefine e-prescribing and even medication management in general? And what do you see happening that way?
So I wanted to jump in a little bit on, you know, this issue of unintended consequences, because that leads right into how the environment's changed and why this matters today.
Yeah.
You know, we talked earlier, Neela just mentioned it again, that doctors and patients were really left out of this equation. The problem was they don't have any really great access point. You know, doctors historically have found it hard to organize themselves, and to some degree, it's been regulated out of, you know, their reach. And patients really don't have anywhere to get in on this at all. So they don't have a lot of input in the standards process, which Neela just pointed out. And they just don't really have any say in the workflows, you know? So they're really just on the sidelines watching what happens, which isn't to say they don't get any value from the network, but the value is more incidental to them and doesn't really necessarily reflect what they want out of, you know, e-prescribing or prescribing in general. Standards all are dominated by these corporate entities, by the ownership and management of the e-prescribing network. So the unintended consequences of that are pretty profound. I would say there are three major problems. The first one is really serious, that the clinical uses of data and of the network itself, because it's controlled by just a handful of players, primarily PBM and pharmacy, they've only got a limited interest in clinical workflows. And this results in business models that are unfortunate, and to simply like shutting down legitimate clinical uses of the data and of the network, because the owners and managers aren't necessarily interested in supporting those use cases or managing down the costs around those uses of the data. Simple example. As communities are finding it harder to get access to healthcare, you'll see regulators in states federally are starting to look at emergency medical services at first responders and saying, look, you know, they're out in the community, they get there first on the scene. If they could just take care of the patient at that point and not transport them back to the hospital, provides better access to care, lowers costs for everybody. So they're giving them more and more responsibility now to actually do clinical things in the field. But the data they need to do that, the medication histories that they could get from this e-prescribing system, are being restricted from them as an unsupported use case. So big issue, you know, that data is being held back from areas where it could actually be extremely helpful, both to the provider of the care and the patient receiving the care. It's not really a separate issue, would be like all the emerging use cases around, for instance, specialty drug prescribing. In that example, the standard e-prescribing just doesn't really work very well. In fact, it almost never works, because patients have to be enrolled to receive the drugs, and there are only certain pharmacies that support dispensing the drugs. So it requires more information than what a doctor can typically do in e-prescribing. And those use cases also are frequently not supported as part of the e-prescribing network. So it cuts off this really rapidly, and this is one of the things that's changing. Specialty is growing by leaps and bounds. It's starting to consume the lion's share of money and becoming a bigger and bigger percentage of scripts that need to be written, and yet it's not handled well at all by e-prescribing. Second thing is this an unintended consequence of rigidly relying on standards. is that innovation really gets dumbed down to the lowest common denominator. It's not really possible today, even for the, you know, the players who put this together, to step out and do anything new and different, because they've got to adhere strictly to the set of fields that are available and the workflows that have been defined. So I'm pretty sure when e-prescribing was put in place, there wasn't an idea that, hey, we got to really clamp down on innovation, but that's been the outcome. And finally, this one's kind of interesting. You could argue that patient choice has been reduced. It's been reduced in regard to like filling the script wherever I want, because now they've got to decide, possibly at a time when they're hearing really bad news about their health, where they want this script to go. They may not even remember it went there. They may decide I'd rather go home a different way, and now they've got an issue because the script's not on their way home. They can't change it to a different pharmacy, or at least they don't know how to change it. Let's put it that way. Their drug selection is compromised because the physician is being directed by the PBM upstream, you know, what drugs they want them to use for the patient, preferably. They don't have to, but preferably. And the patient may never know there were other choices available. Even if they were willing to pay more for a different therapy, they may not have any exposure to it. And then payment mechanisms. You know, the network is really designed around insurance and how insurance plans pay out. It doesn't handle consumer cards very well, and it doesn't handle pharma company financial assistance programs very well either, because that doesn't necessarily align with how the PBMs look at, you know, how the e-prescribing network should be used. And Neela has already pointed out the other one that would be, you know, related to this, that pharmacy is filling scripts, you know, 20 to 25% of the time that the patient never picks up. So adherence hasn't really been solved. And now the pharmacies have an increased burden that I don't know that anybody really thought of when e-prescribing was put in place. So, you know, the changes that are supporting that, a lot of consolidation in the industry. So standards are less important for communication. The network uses 50-year-old technology. Modern technologies make it much simpler for trading partners to exchange information. So innovation could happen now. It just, you know, it just may not because of the way the network's put together. And certainly all kinds of new use cases, but specialty is probably one of the most important ones, and being able to handle that well is very important to our healthcare going forward. So, yeah. So anyway, there's been a lot of change, and also we're now seeing the consequences of that change.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a lot to chew on when you think about a lot of the nuances around how do we make this useful for patients, for doctors, while still respecting that the PBMs, the pharmacy, the HR vendor, they all have a role as well. Neela, you know, what would you add from your perspective? And, you know, are there some practical things that could be done to kind of refine this medication management process?
So I will add something to the points that Cam made, because I think he's correct about the standards, reducing innovation to a certain extent. However, of course, as both a physician and a technology vendor, I'm a huge fan of standards, as I'm sure Cam is as well, right? So the question to me would be not so much should we like abandon the standards to foster innovation, but how can we expand upon the existing standards, right? To better support the other parties that haven't so far been at the table, namely the patient and the physician and the providers or prescribers. Because the standardized prescriptions today are omitting much information that, you know, we as the prescriber would like to add to the prescription and the patients would like to see in the prescription as well. So a common pain point for prescribers, for example, is the fact that you can't add to the structured prescription for what indication the patient is supposed to take the medication, right? In plain language. So if a patient has 10 different medication, it would be amazing to be able to add to the bottle, take one tablet by mouth twice a day for elevated blood pressure, for example, right? So that opportunity does not exist today unless you change your prescription from what we call a structured prescription to an unstructured prescription. The official term is structured sick and unstructured sick, but a sick is basically the dosing instructions that I, mm-hmm. the medication instructions that I give to the patient. So there's many, many, many reasons why providers should utilize structured SICKs or structured prescribing instructions. And many of us don't, because the existing fields don't give us the opportunity to, for example, titrate medications, right? There's many medications that have to be taken as two tablets the first day, one tablet the second day, and so forth. The structured fields don't give us that opportunity today. And I already talked about the indication for the patient for what disease to take that medication. So if we could get back together to expand the standards, for example, to allow for additional use cases, that might help us foster innovation a little bit. The second or the third point that Cam made about the patient choice, that I think is a really important one, right? Because the point-to-point connection today forces us to send the prescription for a known medication to a dedicated pharmacy, right? The patient has to select upfront. Like, how awesome would that be if we could send the prescription to like a repository, right? And then the patient goes to a pharmacy and says, hey, can you download my prescription? The provider send it and they don't have to decide upfront. That would be one potential solution, you know, that we could visualize. And then of course, the most critical point in my mind is giving the patient the opportunity to share into the decision regarding the medication, right? Cam mentioned that today the patients have no insight. What is this going to cost me, right? Is there a better alternative? Is there a cheaper alternative? Could I go somewhere else? Could I use a different medication? And that is a pain point that we're actively trying to solve today with new technology, you know, called real-time benefit checking, that actually allows us to surface information at the point of care. When the prescriber, you know, queues up the prescription in the electronic health record, it surfaces information. A, what will this cost with the patient's insurance? What will this particular medication cost? What will it cost at a different pharmacy? What will it cost with a 90-day supply versus a 30-day supply? Is there an alternative medication that might be even cheaper and is equivalent to the medication the prescriber selected? So, you know, by surfacing this type of information at the point of care, the patient can get involved to a degree in their decision. We'll talk more about how this can affect medication adherence. But obviously, at the end of the day, even that information is still controlled, right? By the payer, by the PBM, because it doesn't surface me the total cost, for example, for the drug, right? It surfaces me what does it cost the patient with their insurance, but it doesn't tell me what's actually the total cost to the healthcare system of this medication. And that's information that I think today is still missing, and where it's still a work in progress and lots to be left in the desired category.
And that's going to be more important with the rise of value-based care, because you will need to know total costs. So that's a really good point.
Yeah. Is there other things you'd add, Cam? I mean, she gave some practical things that would really help patients, and, you know, an expansion of standards would help, you know, the workflow and some of the innovation opportunities. What else would you add as far as practical things that could help us with this?
I was kind of smiling to myself when you asked that question, because I was thinking, you know, none of the changes are really practical, but they really need to happen, you know, so let's say they're necessary. I guess I would say there are some things government needs to add to this, and there's some things from the private sector. So let me go way out there and say, gee, if the government would just do this would be great. One of the things that was really important in the PBM pharmacy relationship years ago was the rise of any willing provider regulation. I don't think that was super popular with the PBMs, but for pharmacy, it meant that if they were willing to accept a network price, they were allowed to participate in the network. I think we need any willing provider regulations around access to clinical data, things like med history, eligibility, benefit checks, controlled substance and vaccine registries. you know, the current business models tend to lock that data up for the use of only a few who then can sort of parse it out as they deem fit. And that's really not right. You know, that needs to be made available to anyone willing to, you know, use it meaningfully. And there shouldn't be, you know, winners and losers in terms of pricing around access to clinical data. So that's, there's other things I could ask from the government, but if that would happen, that would free up all kinds of opportunities for the network to expand and grow and innovate. On the private sector side, I think it's interesting if you start to think about the prescription more as a conversation than as a transmission. You know, so like some of what Dr. Jessel was addressing, that the physician could ask for information, receive information, essentially really perfect that script before it goes to the pharmacy. And that would meet both physician and patient needs in a way that we haven't seen yet. As a simple example, the patient and the doctor would like to know, is that drug even in stock? So for the physician to be able to say, hey, pharmacy, I'm thinking about writing for this drug, and the pharmacy says, oh yeah, I've got that in stock, or I don't have that in stock, but it's coming in tomorrow, that gives the physician information, you know, that they can talk to the patient about, can you wait till tomorrow, or I don't want you to wait till tomorrow, let me try again at another pharmacy. So being able to have some back and forth between the doctor and the pharmacy around, you know, the cost of the drug, availability of the drug, financial assistance available for the drug. You know, often there is financial assistance, but the pharmacies don't necessarily pick that up out of the prescription transaction, don't necessarily use it, and the patients don't necessarily even understand it, you know, what's available or why it would be okay or not okay to use. So anyway, there's other examples, but the ability to have a back and forth between doctor and pharmacy that happens fast enough not to slow down the process would be a really interesting change in the way electronic prescriptions work. I think also, you know, thinking about the patient after the script's written, finding new ways to, you know, let them know about affordability options, let them know different options on where they can fill the script to save money or to make sure it's in stock, helping them understand their therapy better. I mean, how many times do you leave the doctor's office and you're kind of fuzzy on, yeah, what was my diagnosis again? And why am I taking this drug? And I forget how I'm supposed to take it. So, you know, I guess expanding e-prescribing to encompass the patient needs as well. The only other thing I'd mention, John, we didn't even bring this up yet. Identity is a really big problem these days. As e-prescribing has gotten, you know, so ubiquitous, there's a lot of bad actors. You know, Dr. First itself has seen dark web traffic around, you know, identities on our network and ways to find your way past the identity proofing process. And we've had to just really focus on tightening up. And I know it's a general issue around the whole e-prescribing network. So being able to have stronger, but also simpler, faster identity proofing, because it's a major pain point for doctors, and the ability to syndicate that identity to other systems the doctor might want to use so they don't have to identity proof themselves over and over and over after they've already done it once. I think there's a lot of room today actually to work on identity management as well. So those I think are some of the main things we're thinking about in terms of how we can refine e-prescribing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the identity management is a problem. And we see that in controlled substances, right? Where you start the two-factor and how do you make it usable for the doctor, but also, you know, understand and prevent fraud and other bad actors in the system. So Neela, you focused a lot on, you know, how do you assist your providers, right? And also even just to get the patients more engaged to improve adherence and health outcomes, which I'm sure is a focus of Athena Health as we move to more value-based arrangements and your providers need those types of outcomes. Talk about what you're doing there and kind of how have providers and patients responded to these efforts?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, I want to say that I completely second Cam's wish list.
You'll take
every
that too.
Item on it.
Santa Claus, please bring.
So yes, absolutely. So it, obviously, you know, at Athena, we want to try to wick away work from our providers and clinical staff too, right? Everybody is overworked, especially in the healthcare industry, in the medical practices. The 3 years pandemic haven't helped. So we try to automate as many tasks as possible and make it as easy as possible for providers to actually concentrate on the important piece, which is the diagnosis and the treatment, right? And actually taking care of the patient. So we try to help by automating the entire medication prescribing process. So it starts by downloading the history of prior prescriptions, right? Because especially if it's a new patient, providers and prescribers don't always have the full medical history at hand. So the patients will often come in with an entire plastic bag full of, you know, tablets and packages, and we have to painstakingly reconcile it. So we help by downloading that prescribing history, and that also includes medications that patients filled by paying cash that didn't go through insurance into the electronic health record. So prescribers start out with a full medical history as far as medications is concerned and can make better decisions regarding potential interactions with new prescriptions they're planning to execute upon. Then obviously we try to make the electronic prescribing easier by, you know, leveraging all kinds of different intermediaries to send the prescription directly to the pharmacy, including real-time benefit checking information, which I just mentioned. So that really is intended to facilitate conversations between providers and patients at the point of care, right? About cost, insurance coverage, alternative medications, 30-day versus 90-day supply. I already mentioned this because one of the ways we can improve medication adherence is by being transparent with the patient before we send the prescription to the pharmacy, right? The last thing we want to happen is for that patient to show up at the pharmacy and be stunned by the cost of the prescription drug, right? And then in worst case scenario, not pick up the prescription and not tell us about it, right? Because then you might be left with a patient who now goes 3 months or 6 months until the next visit, not taking the prescription that you thought they were taking. And then everybody is surprised when they come back and they haven't improved, or in worst case have even, you know, their outcome has significantly worsened because they could not afford the medication. So I think having that transparency and also the shared decision-making at the point of care is crucial for good patient care. And it coincidentally, even though it's a couple more clicks during the visit, it saves a significant amount of work downstream, right? The patient, we will avoid the phone call back from the pharmacy. Hey, this is too expensive. Can you change the prescription, right? This now occupies staff time. They have to track me down in the exam room, have me make a new prescription. So all this can be avoided by bringing that transparency directly to the point of care when that prescription actually happens. And then the last point, how we try to help, and, you know, Cam alluded to this, that most of us, and we're all patients, don't remember all the details discussed during the visit, right? I actually read a recent study that was very interesting by the Joint, it was published in the Joint Commission Journal of Quality and Patient Safety. And it had asked patients about their, you know, perception, how much of the information provided to them during a visit they actually retained. Most patients, over 90% of patients, felt really confident that they retained the vast majority of the information given to them during the visit. But when the study actually drilled further down, it turned out that it was only around 50% of what was actually remembered as far as diagnosis and treatment. And when it came to medications, only 43.4%, less than half of patients remembered medication details. So you can imagine that that has a pretty significant impact on medication adherence, right? If I don't remember the details, what my provider told me, how to take those medications, especially if changes were made, you know, take two tablets instead of one tablet, I'm not gonna have a very good outcome. So how we're trying to help with that is actually by partnering with Dr. First to send prescription pickup reminders to the patient after the prescription is made. So the patients will receive a text message alerting them that the prescription was sent to the pharmacy, telling them which pharmacy it was sent to, allowing them to schedule a pickup reminder so they don't forget to pick it up at the pharmacy. And then it also serves coupons if there are coupons available. Let's say it was an expensive brand name medication, a generic didn't exist, and there's a coupon available to help with financial assistance, we will actually surface this in the message. And then lastly, and most importantly in my mind, we surface educational information around that medication. So for those patients who don't remember what we discussed during the office visit, or who were perhaps intimidated, right, and didn't want to let it on that they didn't understand what I was discussing, they can now read up on it in the comfort of their own home on their phone. And our data, interestingly, has actually found that we have a 92% favorable approval rating from patients regarding those text messages, which I think is really impressive, right? Because all of us hate all those solicitation text messages, right? It's like, oh God, another one. Uh-huh. 92% of patients found it helpful, and we have a less than 1% opt-out rate across our entire network. And like you said earlier, we serve about 20% of the US patient population. So that's pretty good. That's a lot of people who are being helped potentially retain information and increase medication adherence. And of those people who click on our text messages, 83% actually click through to the education material. Wow. So hopefully that can help improve that 43.4% retention rate that the study found. So yeah. Again, sure, there's lots more things we can do and that we would like to do, but that's just in a nutshell what we're currently doing to help both prescribers and patients on the clinical side.
Yeah, some great examples. I love that. And I love seeing it going directly to the patient. That's really interesting. You know, Cam, as we wrap up, you know, how is Dr. First kind of approaching this work with partners? You know, obviously, she gave some great examples with Athena Health, and what you're doing. You know, what else, you know, how does Dr. First think about this as assisting these partners to kind of refine the medication management process?
Yeah, let me start with this. You know, when we started in the beginning, we were talking about the progress the network's made over time. It really is a bit of a healthcare IT miracle, because the players involved, PBM, pharmacy, physician, patient, there are conflicts of interest between all those parties. And the fact that they found a way to work together and create something as good as what they created is fantastic. But in order to take it to the next level, what we're doing as a company is we're trying to make sure we stay in touch with each of those entities and dive pretty deep into what they need now and what they're going to need in the next 5 years or so. And we're looking outside the current restrictions of the technology and the relationships and saying, this actually responds to something Neely said earlier. I do believe in standards. I'm extremely clear in my head on what value standards create, but also where they stop short. And we're starting to take a stronger look at where the standards are no longer meet the needs of the industry and will take too long to catch up, and saying, can we introduce new technology into those spaces now so that, recognizing the consolidation that's happened on both sides of the transmission, is it possible now to just put trading partner relationships in place where people can experiment with each other? They can fulfill some of these more complex work case or use cases like specialty, and have more information available, like that, you know, conversation we were talking about with pharmacy and physician. So we're trying to do the thought leadership, we're staying in touch with all the players, and we're building some of that technology now so that we can start to experiment, and maybe it won't take another 30 years, you know, to put the layer on top of this that lets everybody be where they really want to be. And when we, you know, for players who can't reach that level, they can still communicate with everyone because the standards are all in place. So everybody involved has done a great job. Everybody's got past their own, you know, business issues with each other. But now is the time to really take the lid off innovation and see what's possible. So it's an exciting time.
Love that. Well, Cam, Neela, it's been really interesting in showing how much further we've gone beyond e-prescribing and everything that's happening with medication management. So thanks so much for taking time to share these insights and perspectives. And thanks everyone for watching and listening. If you want to find more great healthcare IT content like this, be sure to check it out at healthcareittoday.com and search for Healthcare IT Today on your favorite podcast application. Thanks, Cam. Thanks, Neela.
Thanks, John. Good to see you.